Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. Urbanite Radio stories on The Mark Steiner Show are made possible by National Connections Academy, an accredited online private school with affordable tuition for grades K through 12. Visit nationalconnectionsacademy.com for more information. And we're about to have one of those Urbanite Radio stories on the air right now. There was an article, a story in this month's Urbanite that was written by Rob Hyacin on consumerism called Have Hard Times Killed Off the Great American Consumer? There are many arguing that that these tight times are changing us into frugal consumers. Other people are arguing that this is just temporary. Some are saying we should really build an economy not based on consumerism, that consumerism, as Annie Leonard said in one of our earlier interviews, was something created in the 1930s and 40s very consciously in this country to change American behavior, and we've been in it for a while now. Will that change your change? I'm curious to see what you are doing this Christmas and this holiday season, this Hanukkah, whatever you're celebrating, Kwanzaa, 410-319-8888, if you're buying, if you're changing, and why. We are joined by two of our guests right now, Dr. Lawrence Kotlikoff, who is professor of economics at Boston University and a research associate at the National Bureau of Economic Research, and Elizabeth Haynes, who has her company, Haynes & Company Consulting, former head of strategic planning for Urban Outfitters. Lawrence Kotlikoff, and Elizabeth Haynes, welcome. Good to have you both with us.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much.
So let's talk about where we are now. I mean, we have been a consumerist culture for a good 60 years or more, and in a very intense way. And are we seeing the beginning of a change there? Or is this just a dip because we're making much of it? And that I think you said, Lawrence Kotlikoff, that that it's chic now to be frugal.
Yeah, I think it is. You know, a lot of what we're doing when we consume is to try and keep up with the Joneses. And if everybody else is consuming less, then we don't have to keep up so much. So part of it's that. Part of it is we're just scared to death about the future because we have seen so many people become unemployed. We have probably effectively about 17% of the workforce either formally unemployed or informally unemployed or underemployed. And everybody's nervous about their job, and we've got administration that's done nothing really serious to fix the economy in terms of the fundamental disease or plague that it's facing with respect to the financial system. The financial system exploded, erupted, whatever you want to call it. It can happen again tomorrow.
Elizabeth?
Yeah, I would agree with that. But the other thing I think is really interesting that I'm seeing going on with consumers right now is that they are consuming in a different way. So it's not simply that all consumerism has gone away.
Mm-hmm.
It's that they're actually searching out value and how they're defining it in a very different way than they might have 2 or 3 years ago when times were good. So we're just seeing a lot more of that spend that is happening move into places like outlets or seeking out sales and the best deal, shopping at off-price stores like TJ Maxx or Lowman's, but also an explosion, a continued explosion of shopping online because it's so easy to compare prices and to really get the best deal. And so while I think people are certainly spending less overall, and that is manifesting itself in all kinds of ways, how they're spending, what they are still taking out of their wallet to buy things with, it's different than it has been.
There are two things really strike me about what both of you said that I want to come to. But I'm in all fairness, since we're, I would like to hear some of our listening consumers join us here. 410-319-8888. And Charisse in Windsor Mill, you're on the air.
Good afternoon or good evening. I just wanted to make a quick comment.
Sure.
About being a consumer. I'm still consuming. I'm consuming in a different way, as your guest just alluded to. Not only am I buying discounted items, but more so spending money in a different way. This holiday season, we're going to be spending money on food and having friends and family over, spending money on having relatives travel in to spend quality time with new family members, and spending money more in ways that will remember and touch the heart and soul. So more savvy consuming, yes, but also more thoughtful consuming on what we'll actually remember. Because I don't remember, you know, the $300 boots that I bought 2 years ago, where they are, you know, or... or, you know, whatever jeans were in at the time, you know, or the credit cards that we're still spending or paying off from whatever trendy items we bought, you know, last year or the year before. This year we're spending it on, like I said, being able to spend time and celebrate each other. And I think that's what a lot of my friends and family are going to do.
Sharice, thanks so much.
Interesting. That's a great, I think, good individual strategy, but for the overall economy, it's pretty unhealthy because if we all cut back our spending, and I'm not saying that this economy has to be driven just by people spending. We can also have more investment and produce goods and services like machines and equipment. So we don't have to just produce consumption goods, and we don't have to spend like everything on consumption, but right now we have a kind of a macroeconomic disease here where everybody is afraid of the future, and because of that, they're all holding off on spending, and consequently nobody's hiring, and consequently people have less money to spend because they don't have jobs. So you see the self-fulfilling expectation problem here. This is a psychological recession we're experiencing, and we need to change things around.
I wonder if there's a couple of questions were raised with that, and before we go to the next caller, Elizabeth, you've been in the business of getting people to buy, right?
Yep, absolutely.
So I wonder. Let me just say it's a very sensitive question here about that. I mean, we live in this society that really, in some ways, I think the consumerism was a very conscious effort around World War II, after World War II, to really build an economy based on consuming personal items as opposed to building large industrial things that we consume. So are we pushing – and I was in the advertising world for a while, so I'm talking about myself too. In the 80s, I worked in advertising for a while, getting people to buy things that I'm not sure they really wanted or they even needed. So are we playing on the addictive nature of human beings to want by pushing these things? And really, we may be building companies, but are we doing? We've contributed to helping people build mounds of debt for stuff.
I think that people tend to buy because they're seeking some kind of experience, and that's really where I believe products connect with consumers and then their wallets. They believe that by purchasing something, it's going to make them feel a certain way. And so in that sense, you know, have we been creating a culture that is about delivering experiences through products over the last 50 to 60 years? Absolutely. I think that that has been the case. What was so interesting to me in, for instance, what Sharice was just sharing is that I'm sensing that folks are beginning to move into a different place on this, and it's not that they aren't consuming, it's that how they think about the experience is changing. And so they are spending and thinking about how to spend money on creating their own experiences as opposed to the product sitting in for the experience. And this is new to us. This is not a way that we have really driven spending in our economy. So what will be really interesting to see over the next couple of years is, does this stick around? You know, to Dr. Kopikoff's point, do we continue to decline spending on things that are manufactured and that we make and that we sell through retail environments, or do we start to find entrepreneurs in that space, as we always will, that are going to find the next way of connecting a consumer to an experience, whether it's through food and travel, in unique and different ways that allow them to create their own experiences and their own way of consuming? That's what's going to be really interesting because, you know, again, people are not stopping all of their spending. You know, we're talking about it being a down holiday season, but we're not talking about it being down 10% from last year. We're talking it being down 1 or 2%. But it's a big number because we're such a large economy. But if people begin to redirect that spend and spend more money on food or spend more money on travel or put the two together, create their own experiences, you're going to find entrepreneurs that figure out a way to market that. Absolutely.
I have a follow-up to that. But let me go back to the phones, and we'll come back to both of you at 410-319-8888. Carl, in your car, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Carl. Welcome.
Yeah. Well, I have a question about if our consumerism is down, and I heard this morning in here in Maryland it's they're estimating 6% over the Christmas holidays. What's driving, in the sense that we don't have housing going up? They just declared this morning that there's a greater number of foreclosures here in Maryland. The jobs are at 14 to 17%, depending on who's saying it, as a loss. What's driving the stock market? Why is that going up? Where's the money coming for these people to invest in the stock market? They said the average man isn't investing.
That's a really interesting point. Lawrence, you want to grab that as our economist for the moment?
The rich in this country still own the vast majority, a large fraction of the wealth, the financial wealth. So a lot of what you see is people are thinking that the stock market overdid it, went on the downside. It fell by 50% between October 2007 to December 31st, 2008. And so people, I think, feel maybe they... So I don't know if, myself, whether there's a good, solid economic basis for the stock market going back up. It certainly hasn't gone back to where it was. It's maybe recaptured about 40% or so of the losses. So we don't know, but we do know that the person on Main Street isn't necessarily the one who is playing on Wall Street, and that's what I really care about. And we know a lot of older people probably got panicked and sold at the bottom of the market, and this partial rebound in the market hasn't done them any good because they are too afraid to get back in. So there's been a lot of grief and suffering associated with a calamity here that didn't need to happen, because we have a financial structure that's set up for hucksters and has yet to be fundamentally reformed.
Well, the time about reform, let me ask the two of you this question. I wonder, since you're both looking at this from different ends of this world, the issue, maybe not different ends, but different perspectives on consumerism, that can a consumerist economy that we have now survive without people living in mounds of debt?
Well, we can move toward people saving more, and we can have an economy that entails more production for investment rather than production for consumption. The Japanese grew very well for decades on that basis. They had very, and the Chinese now have a very high saving rate, and they still are growing and producing a lot of things for other people to consume. We don't have to be the big spenders. And we frankly have bills going out the wazoo at the federal level, and we're expanding those all the time in terms of future tax obligations. So we have to get our own household finance in line and in order, and also the national financial situation in order. And we need to get our financial system fixed up so it's actually an honest one. If one goes to my website, kotlikoff.net, and you click on op-eds, you'll see a piece that came out in the Financial Times last week about how to fix the financial system called limited purpose banking. There are ways we can fundamentally reform the system to make it safe for use, for public use. It's not safe now, and what we've seen could, the blow-up we saw could be just minor relative to what could happen now that Uncle Sam has become AIG, because Uncle Sam has all these commitments that it really can't cover. It's in effect issued about $24 trillion in insurance guarantees of all kinds, not just FDIC insurance, but insurance, mm-hmm. insurance companies. And all that could blow up in our faces in 1 minute if there was a run on the banks, which could happen. That sounds extreme, but...
But plausible.
Quite plausible. It's a very low probability event, but you look around at the world, the history of the world, and Argentina and other countries that have had runs on the bank. Our FDIC is insuring our dollars, not insuring our purchasing power. So if we had a run on the banks tomorrow, the FDIC would be short $6 trillion. They have no money at all in reserves, and we'd have to print $6 trillion. That would likely lead to hyperinflation. That would likely lead to anybody who didn't run on the bank getting their money out for sure, but getting out very little purchasing power. So everybody would have an incentive to run on the bank.
Right.
My drift.
So, Elizabeth, what were you trying to say?
Yeah, I just want to jump in a little bit here, because while I think that's a plausible situation, let's kind of turn the lens a little bit back to the consumer and back to your question of, can we survive as a consumerist economy without mounds of debt? And absolutely. The original point made that we should be increasing our savings rate, that is a strategy that the Japanese undertook to success for their economy and still grew. All of that is true. The only other thing I want to throw in here, though, is to say, you know, part of what that fundamental reform needs to include is, again, thinking about the consumer. How does the consumer purchase financial products, whether it's increased savings, and so additional money being put back, or the initial question around debt? You know, one of the things that we have to make sure that we do going forward in order to be able to support a consumerist economy that does save is to be sure that we give consumers, when they sit down to pick through all these financial products, the same kind of transparency and understanding that they have when they walk into the Target or the Walmart to pick among the different varieties of deodorant. You know, they can pick up the product, they can look at it, they can really make an informed decision. That's something that had been missing when you started to look at the kinds of various mortgage products that were coming out. You know, people just fundamentally did not understand a lot of the fine print, and it wasn't their own fault. It wasn't explained to them well. So if we're going to survive as a consumerist economy with a lot, you know, even as we pay down the debt that we have at the macro level and at the individual level, it's going to require, you know, taking some of that consumerist mindset and actually putting it into the financial system.
Yeah, this proposal, limited purpose banking, has a federal financial authority that actually discloses every single security that's up for sale in very fine detail. And Elizabeth, you're absolutely right that we have, in effect, Tylenol on the shelves with cyanide inside it, and nobody's disclosing which bottles have got the cyanide and which are safe. And until people really get our financial system transparent, it's not going to be trusted. And until we have real trust in the financial system, we're going to not have trust in the future of the economy. So it all goes together. We need fundamental reform. We probably need to fire the generals we've got, economic generals down in Washington, because they're not getting the job done. They want to go back to Wall Street and make big salaries, but that's not what we need.
What were you trying to say, Elizabeth? I'm sorry.
I was just going to echo that point to say, you know, the idea of a consumerist economy is exactly that idea of transparency. One of the reasons that people feel confident to buy things for themselves is they know what they're getting. And until they have that same level of confidence in the retail side of their financial lives, they're going to be more likely to hold on to their dollars and stock them, you know, stock them underneath the mattress, as opposed to putting them into a financial institution. We need all these things to be working together. We need people to be saving more, but we need them to be spending what they can afford to spend, doing it wisely, having smart, you know, solid, stable mortgages on their properties that are properly valued so that they don't get foreclosed. We need all of that stuff working together, and then we really can be a consumerist economy, but we'll be a smart consumerist economy.
We're looking at our consumerist economy during this holiday season, your own personal habits. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this larger question that we're wrestling with our two guests. Dr. Lawrence Kotlikoff is professor of economics at Boston University and a research associate of the National Bureau of Economic Research. Elizabeth Haynes runs Haynes & Company Consulting. She's the former head of strategic planning at Urban Outfitters. 410-319-8888, or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Adrian writes in, why is it that we continue to hear that consumers are at fault for not spending as much during the economic downturn? Why would any economist expect to depend on consumerism to drive the economic recovery when the average consumer has received no bailout or relief? What happened to the idea that a nation should depend on industry and exports, not on its own citizens? Interesting question.
Well, I mean, I'll start with that one.
Okay,
it's a great question, Adrian. And the truth of the matter is that were we in this position 40 or 50 years ago, we wouldn't have been looking to consumers. However, consumers now represent over two-thirds of the spend of our country, whether you're buying a product or buying gasoline at the pump or going to the grocery store. So that is, in effect, what drives our economy. And so while we've had quite a bit of government spending that's kicked in, and we've had, you know, a greater degree of business investment spending, at the end of the day, it's never going to be enough to make up for what you and I spend every day. So, you know, it's retail's job to help, you know, pick up part of the burden here. I think that's why so many people are still talking about why aren't consumers spending.
Lawrence Kotlikoff, I'd like you to comment as well, and also in terms of this. Well, answer that, then I'll proceed with a different question. Go ahead.
Well, I agree 100% with Elizabeth, and also the person wrote in. But until we get the retail side of the story is very important. We're not going to end up saving at the same rate as China. We don't need to save nothing, but, you know, if we saved 10% of our national income, that would be a huge amount. We're now saving about 1%. And we used to save around 13% in 1960. So we need a change, but we also need to get the everybody on board that this economy is actually going to be productive in the future and work together and coordinated. And right now, there's no trust because the government hasn't come across with any real reform. So I think it all goes back to fixing the financial system, having the transparency that Elizabeth talked about, but also making sure the banks can no longer gamble with our money. And, again, limited purpose banking is a solution for that.
Now, the question, I'll come back to what we talked about before. When people talk about this economy does not have to be based on personal consumerism to grow and survive, what would that mean if that was actually possible? And when we hear people say that, what would then the economy be, Lawrence Kotlikoff?
Well, we would build electric cars for people living in China. The state-of-the-art electric cars, or for Europeans or Norwegians, we don't have to be consuming everything that we make and importing consumption goods and services. We can also produce for other people's consumption.
When Elizabeth Haynes, if the economy did begin to shift, and I think about all the brilliant creative minds that work in your world and work in the world of advertising, what might have to shift? I mean, let me put it this way. That wasn't the right way to ask that question. What I'm saying, Elizabeth, is that it seems to me that we need people to buy, is what you're saying, and people to save. But the reality is, do we really need as much stuff as we always buy? Do I need everything I see at Urban Outfitters? Or I got this incredible catalog, or my fiance did the other day, and we're looking at it, and I love that shirt, and I like that leather vest, and I like that thing over there. But do I really need them? Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, what are we doing to ourselves by always having to buy this stuff?
Americans are known the world over. We like to buy stuff. It's what we like to do. And we're very good at it, in case anybody was curious. But the truth of the matter is that none of us needs as much as we buy. And I think that that's really the shift that you're seeing, and it's certainly the shift I'm seeing in consumers that's taking place right now. You know, the biggest concern that retailers have today is what happens if people get used to not buying as much stuff.
Right.
You know, what if this is the new normal? And a year ago, they didn't know how that would work for them. And if where we are today is the new normal, you know, it feels much more doable. And it's because they have figured out how to manage their inventories and bring in fewer things. They've figured out how to bring the things in that are more special and better match people's budgets. You know, there's a lot of tricks in the bag for the average retailer to continue to be a smart retailer and line up with where consumers are. But, you know, the truth of the matter is, do we need all the stuff that we buy? You know, you talk to somebody like Susie Orman, she's going to tell you no, and she's probably right. But what it will open up an opportunity, thinking again about the consumer, is if people are saving more, and so for every $100 that they have, you know, now they're only spending $85 on goods and, you know, on things that they buy for themselves or their families or their friends, and they're saving $15 of those dollars, well, now that isn't money that just disappears. When there's faith and trust in the financial system, that's going to open up opportunities for new goods and services in the financial community. So it's not that people like me may shift over into that industry, but it's a way to create new opportunities and new jobs in another industry.
Let's get a very quick thought from our listener, Mark in Carrollton. We only have a few minutes left, so get right to it if you would, please. Thank you.
Yes. I had 2 points. One, I don't think that the problem is consumption, is conspicuous consumption. I think that Americans pretty much have been conditioned, if you will, programmed to consume, overly consume. And my second point is that it seems like your guests are making a huge assumption, and this assumption is that the leaders, the elites, the ones who own these companies are somehow interested in the American people, in the consumer. They're only interested in the consumer as a commodity, so to speak, but I think history has shown that these people actually loathe the consumer. They have contempt for us, and the only reason that they even deal with us is that they believe that the money that we somehow generate doesn't belong to us. It's theirs. And I'd like your panel to comment.
We only have a couple minutes left. Would you want to each take a shot at that? We have like literally about 2 minutes left on this one.
I think this conspicuous consumption is a part of the story, but you have to also realize a huge amount of our consumption is due to health expenditure that's driven by transfers from young people to older people to pay for Medicare and Medicaid. But I do think that we have crossed the Rubicon, that there's going to be a depression mentality among consumers for many years to come, and that that's going to have an impact on how well the economy performs. But we fundamentally need to fix the system and then hope that the American spirit will bring us through.
I want to address the other part of Mark's comment, which is, you know, the idea that that the people we're consuming from are the elite. And what I just want to point out is that, you know, a vast majority of the consumption that each of us does every day is actually at the small business level. You know, small businesses are the engine of the United States economy, and they are the ones that have actually taken it the hardest as we've ramped down our own personal consumption of goods and services. And so, you know, if in fact you feel comfortable consuming and you wanna really power your local community, quite honestly, put that business with a local business. You know, go spend your dollars at the guy down the block. Make some decisions to put that money back directly into your community, because I can promise you that they don't have contempt for the consumers that walk in their door. They're the lifeblood of that business for that family.
And buy some food for the halfway house or some presents for them. There's people you can well spend your money on.
Amen to that. And I want to thank you both. I really appreciate you both coming on. You've been great. I look forward to having you both back on at some point. Elizabeth Haynes and Lawrence Kotlikoff, thank you so much for being part of the show today.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
It's been great to have you both on.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite, Baltimore's free monthly magazine of ideas and innovation. This month, it's the consumption issue, with holiday tales about spending, saving, and the true price of American consumerism. Urbanite is available at over 800 locations. Visit www.urbanitebaltimore.com for a list of drop locations. And this was one of our Urbanite radio stories.